I learned what it was like to lose my freedom last year in Gaza. I was kidnapped and held hostage for nearly 4 months by a group called the Army of Islam. It was certainly the hardest, darkest, and most frightening experience of my life. But my guest today was forced to endure much, much more. She lived through 6 years of captivity in the Colombian jungle at the hands of the FARC guerrilla movement. We were both fortunate in our separate prisons, half a world apart, in that we were given old, battered radios. And on them, we followed news of each other's stories. And I am really honored today to say welcome to the interview, Ingrid Betancourt.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Ingrid, tell us, was there a moment when you suddenly realized just how serious your situation was, that you were a prisoner and that you might not regain your freedom for many, many years?
Yes. It was like a door that was shut behind me. That's the impression I have. And it came on the first year of abduction, when I realized that it was a whole year there. Because at first I thought it was going to be like for 3 months. I thought, oh my God. When I came to that first year, my God, I said, ooh, this is going to be hard and long. But I couldn't think that it was going to last for 6 years.
I really need to say that there's no real comparison between my experience. I was out within 4 months and you were there for 6 years. But when I think back on that time, I think I felt that I was buried alive, really. I was living, I was breathing, I was eating, but I wasn't really alive. I wasn't really living. I felt that to be really alive, you do need to be free.
It's a torture every second, and every time you breathe is hard. I mean, it's not... You have to go through it to understand, because you, in the civil world, I mean, in the outside, the free world, you can have problems, but you always have a choice. And you always, I mean, even though you could be mistreated or humiliated or whatever, you can just find another space. Here, you are submitted to the will of others, to the arbitrary, to the cruelty of human being, and you don't have the choice.
There's a terrible powerlessness, isn't there?
Yes, yes.
One of the really powerful emotions I felt, especially at the beginning, was a sense of guilt towards what I was putting my family through. I felt that I had taken risks that had caused them huge suffering, and it was almost a crushing sense of guilt, and I wonder if you felt that.
Oh yes, I felt it a lot. Especially because I was pointed as have been, I mean, in Colombia they would say that it was my fault, that I was looking to be abducted, that I was searching for that situation to happen to me, which was horrible.
Paint a picture for us of day-to-day life in captivity. How were you held, in the open or in huts or chained all the time, with other prisoners all the time?
We have tents. And we live under, you know, military tents, camouflage kind of prints on the tents. It's very military. Everything is very military. The jungle is a aggressive, like I would think that it was like another enemy. You know, I'm from a Green Party, and I'm supposed to love green things. But I have to admit that I just hated the jungle.
It's understandable.
Oh my God. The impression, you know, the trees are so thick on your head that you don't see the sky. It's so horrible not to see the sky, not to see the sun, the clouds, you know, no horizon.
Sure.
Just like...
And you were often chained, and I'm sure anybody who's been chained knows the terrible noise that a chain makes with every movement, the way it digs into your wrist or your ankles.
Yes. You know, Alan, there are things I cannot talk about.
I understand. I understand. And your father died a month after your captivity. Can you tell us how you learnt of that news and the impact it had on you?
It was a very difficult moment because one of the reasons why I didn't want to go to San Vicente, because I didn't want to go, I was forcing myself to go, was because my father was very ill. And he had been in the hospital for like 3 weeks, I mean, between life and death. And finally, he got this extra little time to live with us. And when he got out from the hospital, the physician said to me, "Look, Ingrid, he can go away tomorrow or in a month or in a year, we don't know. It's just, you know, it's a tiny threat of life he has." So I was very aware of the risk, you know. And my father was, he was the love of my life. I know we all, women, daughters, we always say that, but it's so true. I mean, it's so, so true. And I was just praying God that he would just keep alive until I would come back. And I was in a hooch. I had tried to escape the first time, so I was chained. And they brought to the camp some kind of vegetables, which was, wow, a luxury. They would never do that. And those vegetables were packed in newspapers. And so I asked if we could have the newspapers to read something. I mean, they were old papers. So they brought us those newspapers. And I remember I was like trying to make them flat to try to read something. There was this piece of newspaper, and there was a picture of a priest surrounded by photographers and near a coffin. And I thought, oh my God, what a weird scene, what's this? And then I read the caption, and they were saying, "This priest is looking horrified how the press is, you know, just gathering around Mr. Gabriel Betancourt's coffin."
Your father?
My father. And I had to read this, and I said, no, that's my father. It's a guy that's the same name. It cannot be my father. It's not my father. But it was.
Too much.
Oh, yeah.
Like all of us prisoners.
Yes.
We both, I'm sure, watched our guards very, very closely. And I just wonder what you learned about human nature from the behavior of your guards.
Oh, I learned all about human nature. Everything. I was like, 6 years, imagine. I learned everything about human nature. I learned, for example, how weak we are in front of group pressure. I suppose you know that too.
For sure, yeah.
How we can even see people just saying exactly the opposite of what they feel because they are afraid. And you know what? I'm going to tell you something. One of the... I read the Bible a lot. And one of the very special moments of the Bible when Peter is there, Jesus is in prison, and the guards around him said, "Oh, you're Peter, you're one of his friends." And he said, no, I don't know him. I could understand a lot about Peter. It was so perfect, that so human, we are so there.
Religion was tremendously important to you.
Oh, yes. But not religion, because, you know, religion is kind of, you know, the rituals. No, it's not religion. It's the spiritual connection with God. You can go through it by religion. You can go through meditation. You can go by your own you can go through all kind of religions, but that connection with God, that connection with God is what makes you human. That's the difference.
Some people would have doubted, though, would have asked God why he was letting you and your family, your children, suffer so long and seemingly so unnecessarily. Wasn't there any shaking of your faith?
Well, yes, there was. I fought with him for a whole year because I was so mad at him that he could have taken my father away. You know, I thought I had the right to be there when he was going to die. I had been a good woman, you know. I deserved to be with him.
You know, here I think we differ a little because I wasn't actually praying before I was captured, and actually I didn't feel kind of right about starting because I was in trouble. But also on that radio I had, I would hear of terrible things happening to entirely innocent people in places like the Congo, and I felt that if God wasn't intervening to save those Congolese children, say, I didn't see why he would intervene in my life, and I struggled to believe that God manages our individual lives. Maybe you would find that difficult to understand.
You know, I think that the problem with God is that you have to ask the right questions, because you're not asking the right question there. I mean, God is not doing the mess here in our world. We are. We are provoking that mess. It's our choice because we are free. That's the problem. He made us free, because the easy path is not believing and being cynic. Cynicism is great. You just can't go and say, I'm here, but I'll take my revenge. They're treating me like this, but I can be like a cockroach and I'll do whatever they want me to do and I'll be fine. You can be garbage, human garbage, if you want. But you also can be something different. And it's very hard if you're alone. But if you have this faith, because it's faith, if you really believe that even if it's hard, you're going to learn something.
That thing for me in Gaza was, it seemed like the great psychological battle of my life to that point. And I had all kinds of psychological strategies to try to keep my mind in the right place. That was my word. I think your word was to keep your head above water. I had all kinds of psychological debates and tricks, if you like, strategies to try to keep out of the darkness and into the light, steering my mind into hope and promise.
Once I admitted that I was there for a long time, then I began to look to my surrounding in another way. Like, okay, I'm going to be here. This is going to be my world for a long time. So there was something for me which was important, was to preserve my dignity. Even though when you're not free, you know, you cannot preserve your dignity. I mean,
for sure. How did you try?
It was like trying to understand how I wanted me to react, because I came to a point where I was reacting and just reacting to all that hatred and cruelty and humiliation, and I didn't like the way I was reacting because I felt it was not the proper way to react. It was too, I mean, I was reacting with my pride, I was reacting with violence, I was reacting. And then I thought, no, I have to learn to accept things and to shut up and to just see the things with perspective and not to comply to what I think is not good. Between companions, between prisoners, with the relationship with the guards, trying always to do what I thought was good, even though everything was bad.
Sometimes I used to think one day this might end, and I don't want to look back and be ashamed.
Yes, that's the point. That was exactly, that's the way. That was always my perspective. I wanted to think, one day I will see this like my past, and I don't want to be ashamed. And I don't want to be ashamed, and I don't want my children to be ashamed of me. That was very important.
Really, that's it. Perhaps you, dignity is your sense of self and the way you're behaving, and maybe even in the worst circumstances, if you see yourself coping as best as you can, and God knows it wasn't always possible at all for me to do that, but that was perhaps, dignity lies in that, if you can believe you're coping with something bad in a way that you respect in yourself.
Yes, yes, yes. And then, I don't know if you have the same, let's say, path to walk, but at the beginning you could feel that not being ashamed was acting in a way, but then you would just say, no, that's not the way. That's not the way.
Yes.
You understand?
It's. I guess you have to have been there, but it is the way you see yourself behaving. Sometimes it's like a movie. I was watching myself, and sometimes I wasn't impressed, and other times there was sometimes more strength, and I found more strength than I might have expected.
Exactly. That's it. For example, I'll give you a very simple example. I remember when they would be rude to me, insulting me as a woman. And I would respond to that. And then I thought, no, I don't want to respond to that. I don't want to be in their same level. I want to learn to shut up. And that was difficult.
Yeah, for sure, for a politician.
Yes.
Sometimes, though, there was despair, I think. When you were very ill, you believed you were going to die, and I wonder how you tried to prepare yourself for death.
Well, you know, it happened the other way around, because my body just escaped from my control, in a sense. I couldn't... It wasn't me anymore. And I would look to myself and I would say, oh, that's not me, you know. And I don't have a mirror or something to just look at my face, which I suppose was horrible. I was shocked when I saw the picture of me, because I didn't know that I was like that, you know. So I was really shocked.
You looked great when you came out. Yes. People were surprised you looked great.
Yes, but you know what? I think that I'll tell you something about that. I really believe it was a miracle, that face of ours when we came out, because I don't know how I looked before, but I know how my companions looked. And when I saw this picture about all of us, and I just focused on all of one by one. I would see William, my friend, which was my savior. He was the nurse that brought me back to life when I was very sick. So I had William, I had Marulanda, I had Bermeo, I had Artiaga, I had all of them. I could see their faces, and I remember seeing that picture, and I thought, oh my God, they have angel faces. They are so different from the faces we had when we were there. The consciousness of freedom transformed our faces. That's something that it's something I can tell you, because it's a testimony.
I never felt suicidal, but there were times when I felt that death would be a kind of release. Did you see it in that way?
Yes.
Like a great sleep that would end everything?
Or perhaps not a great sleep, because I could foresee that it could be painful. But yes, and I'll tell you also something. I was suicidal. I think that what prevented me from doing it was... the voice of my mother every morning. On the radio we heard messages.
Tremendously important for both of us, those radios.
Oh, yes.
Everything.
Did you had messages from your family?
Yeah, I heard my mum and dad once on the radio, and they once let me see television in their room, and it was the most extraordinary thing to be surrounded by kidnappers and see my father making a very dignified statement. It was one of the most powerful moments of my life.
Did they allow you to be alone where you had to go to the restroom?
I was lucky in that way. I could go to the bathroom. In one prison, briefly, I had to always ask for that, and that's an undignified thing, of course. But
you could shut the door.
I could, yeah. You didn't have that. No. It's amazingly important, that, isn't
it? You know, they forced us. It was like they always open a space, and they would dig a hole, and we had to go there, and it was in an open space. Everybody could see. So for me, I always was trying to find a tree.
Again, I was lucky that the only physical violence came in the last 20 minutes of the kidnap or whatever. But you, I think, did endure physical violence. Are you ready to talk about that yet? Do you think you might ever be? And is it perhaps dangerous not to talk about it in the right private setting?
You know, I've thought a lot about all of this. And I've just decided that there are things that will never be brought up to surface. There are things that have to stay in the jungle.
Tell us about that moment of release.
Oh my God.
Just that absolute moment when you realize it's over.
I'll tell you, it was a physical reaction.
In the way that fear can be physical as well.
Yes.
A physical sensation.
Yes, it was a physical sensation. And it was so overwhelming that I screamed like if I was in pain, but it was not pain, it was joy. And I was screaming. And we were in a helicopter, so nobody noticed it. But then when it was a long, long, long scream, I think like for many seconds. And then I realized I was screaming, and I said, oh, you're a fool. Come on, just stop it. I mean, it was like, get a hold of yourself.
Like a rebirth, almost.
Yes. And then I could see the joy of all of my companions. It was, and we were all like children in that helicopter, jumping and jumping and jumping. And I thought, I was telling them, come on, stop jumping. The helicopter is going to fall. Please, please, we're just seconds from the airport, please, just stay calm. And
you could lose it at the last moment.
Yes, yes, and because, you know, you have been for so many years thinking you are, like, it's not bad luck, but ill fate, you know, that I said, oh my God, now we are just seconds for real freedom, and it's going to, you know, plane is going to crash.
How did it change you? That experience, those 6 years?
I would say it was a mutation, not only a transformation.
It's easier to be empathetic. You can understand the suffering of others more easily than before, maybe.
Oh my God, yes. You can understand everything and you can forgive everything.
Really?
Oh yes. Oh yes.
You're forgiving your captors?
Oh yes. And those are, I mean, not all, but some of them are very easy to forgive. Others that, but
of course,
you know, you have to pick. But then, no, you forgive everything, and you have to forgive also the ones who forgot you, that you loved, and that didn't move a finger to help you. That's hard, but you forgive also that.
Okay.
But the real hard thing is to forgive yourself. Have you forgiven yourself? Yes, you have. Yes, you have. Oh, I'm so glad.
You know, you and I were so lucky to have those old radios that kept us in touch with the outside world. And it's just possible that in a makeshift prison in Colombia or Iraq or Afghanistan right now, there may be a kidnapped victim in his cell listening to us. And what would your message to him be?
To love himself. Don't be hard on yourself. Just love yourself. And always forgive yourself and know that whatever has been wrong, you can do it the next time better. You know, we're improving. And don't be afraid of death. Just a little step. Don't be afraid.
It's about waiting, isn't it? Just waiting and believing. If you can wait long enough, the door's going to open.
Yes, yes. It's faith of things to come that are going to be better. Faith that you can in yourself be better.
And for you and me, the door opened, Ingrid Betancourt, and I can't tell you how good it is to have been able to talk to you here in Paris. Thanks very much.
And you know, Alan, I knew we were going to have this, what we're having now. I was just waiting for the right moment.
That's great. Thanks very much. I wish you the very best, honestly.
Oh, yes.
Thanks.
Me too.
Thanks.